Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of October 21st, 2018. Today we're joined by author, commentator, and climate heart, Ms. Mariah Tinker. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. And we're joined by our other guest, the prolific commentator and Washington Monthly columnist, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good. So, over the past few weeks, there was an interesting hurricane event. So, Hurricane Michael, right, came into the Gulf of Mexico, was a Category 1 storm on a, Tuesday evening, drifting northward up towards the Florida Panhandle, and overnight, the storm literally went from a Category 1, I think, up to a Category 4 or something,
right,
and explosively grew in intensity, consistent with climate models that say these storms over warmer waters will sometimes explosively grow. I think it was last winter we were talking about the bombogenesis snowstorm here that hit New England last year. Similar thing, rapid intensification of a storm. Hurricane Michael hit the Florida Panhandle, in particular a place called Mexico Beach, I think is the name of it, and literally blew the place off the surface of the earth, right? With 150, 170 mile an hour winds. Did either of you guys see that?
Yes, it's just the photos that just basically made it clear that you know, the devastation was just unthinkable. At least 27 deaths, according to the BBC, have been blamed across four states, and it's widely expected to increase. Apparently, there's over 1,000 people that are still unaccounted for.
Oh, really?
And over 150,000 homes and businesses still without power. They may be without power for at least a month or so.
Wow.
Yeah. They said, I'm reading that authorities fear some people who did not evacuate could be buried beneath piles of concrete, wood, and mangled metal.
Man.
Yeah. And so, you know, the historical record for hurricanes going back to 1851 finds no Category 4 hurricane ever hitting the panhandle. So this is different, right? This is definitely different and new and sort of.
Speaking of, I want to talk about Hurricane Michael, but I just, when you say different and new, I saw a report that had a tropical storm making a right-hand turn in the middle of the Atlantic and going into the Azores in Portugal. And so for the first time in history, a hurricane hit southern Europe. Do either of you guys see that? No? I'll look up the link. I mean, but it was just, but in terms of unique events, it was much like Hurricane Michael being so intense hitting the Florida Panhandle, right?
And, you know, these things take so long to recover from. In fact, I was just listening to the Yale has a climate change podcast, and they were
Because it's a good podcast. How can people find it?
If you go to Yale Climate Connections,
okay,
it'll come up.
Mm-hmm.
But they were talking about the lower ninth of New Orleans from when Hurricane Katrina hit, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's 13 years ago, and they're still recovering from that. They still have grocery stores or department stores or food chain stores. There are places that are still completely, you know, that sat in, you know, 12 feet of water for 6 weeks and are completely still ruined and completely devastated.
Really?
13 years later, I mean, again, this is sort of an environmental justice problem where, you know, if you have money, you'll get repaired more quickly than if you don't. And of course, Puerto Rico,
is
still recovering. And, you know, these hurricanes, we just had Florence, right? Hurricane Florence was only 3-4 weeks.
The thing I saw was, again, sort of an environmental justice kind of thing, but tweets, there's all kinds of tweets, all kinds of attitudes in tweeting. But there were pictures of people in the stores picking up toilet paper sort of off the shelves in Mexico Beach, right? And the tweet was, yeah, when they did this in New Orleans, it was called looting, but in Mexico Beach, it's okay. It's because people need this stuff, right? It's the injustice of a lot of this stuff is real and continuing. I guess one of the things that I found interesting was the I guess it was on the Rachel Maddow show. I mean, you pick up all this stuff, but I guess there's this place called the Tyndall Air Force Base, which is near Mexico Beach, which has these very high-end fighters, jet fighters, that didn't get out in time. And so they have like 15 or 20 fighters, each worth between $100 and $300 million a piece.
Wow.
Right, that are damaged from this. And I said, okay, so that's a real cost of climate change that this intense, you know, like, man. That's,
you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, right? If, you know, if we'd done more to prevent this, I mean, we can't entirely prevent it. But on a side note, aren't they supposed to be fast? How did they not get out in time?
Well, as I said, they were like, they got 20 of them out, but then they left some number of them in there, and they I don't know. I mean, if the Russians actually attacked us with airplanes instead of cyberspace, you say, well, can't they get 30 airplanes off the ground in 30 minutes? Isn't that the point of the exercise? I mean, but anyway.
But this one did come really fast. Isn't that part of the problem, is that people didn't have a ton of time to prepare for it?
Well, that's what I mean. The explosive growth that people heard it was a category one, and the next morning it's a category four. I mean, that's not a good thing. That's not a good thing.
But so, you know, Eric Holthouse was quoted in the Washington Post saying that Hurricane Florence is one of the many signs of climate change, and those who deny it are complicit in the destruction, which is a really intense statement, right? Saying, you know, if you're denying it, you are actually responsible for, you know, these deaths, really. I mean, in the large degree, and you think about Governor Rick Scott down in Florida.
Who doesn't want to talk about climate change, right? We're going to ban that from the... I think that that's an interesting segue into the other thing that I wanted to talk about, because the question of responsibility, who owns the moral onus for the disastrous things that are coming, is kind of connected up with a report from the IPCC that came out this past week. So if you don't know, the IPCC stands for the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. It is a organization defined by the United Nations in which scientists from around the world get together, review other people's scientific papers, decide the value of those, put it all in a big scientific blender, and they come up with a consensus about the status of climate change, and they write a report about it. And so the most recent report, and they come out like every 2 years or something, right? This most recent report came out and basically said that all of the horrible things that we've talked about in terms of climate change, right? Bad sea level rise, extreme temperatures, all these things are going to happen before the year 2040, that there will be significant real-time bad things happening in the lives of a lot of people that are grown up, and certainly in the lives of our children, and that without action, I think, let's see, I don't know if I let me find the quote, something like actions that have never been, for which actions of prevention for which there have been no precedents in human civilization, right? Mm-hmm. That's the scale of response that these guys, that this report is talking about. It's a profound, it's a scary report, but again, it's couched in this IPCC language that, if you've been following the issue, the IPCC's been putting out reports for now 30 years. And so did either of you see that? Mariah, what do you think?
I mean, I think it's important to note here a couple things. So the first thing is that oftentimes the IPCC has been sort of, you know, noted as being conservative in some ways on their estimates, right? They sort of, they're very careful with what they state, and they're very careful not to overstate any problems. You know, you have, this is, as you said, it's a, you know, an international panel of scientists that are trying to apply to provide the world with an objective scientific view of climate change. And by the way, they also include the political and economic impacts, right? So they're looking at this really holistically. And, you know, for them to say that it would take a massive global effort to keep warming in line with 1.5 degrees Celsius, that's a big deal. I mean, this is, you know, if they are saying that we need to do something about this, this is a call to action, and that they're it's pretty dire. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of gravity behind that,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
they are so conservative. I mean, a lot of people have actually even faulted them for things like not including permafrost melting in prior reports, which that could possibly be a great big positive feedback loop for methane release, which would, you know, rocket us up in terms of greenhouse gases. So it's a big deal.
DR, did you see any of that stuff?
Yes, and one of the interesting subtexts of this IPCC story is the amount of coverage and the amount of speculation about, you know, media coverage of the lack of media coverage of the IPCC report. There was a great piece by Media Matters that pointed out that about only less than half of the 50 major newspapers of this country gave prominent coverage to the IPCC report, and this also prompted a lot of coverage on some of the sort of the media review shows like CNN's Reliable Sources. Maybe not a lot of coverage, only gave it 3 minutes a few days back, about, you know, why is there not more of a focus on what we can do, and why is this not the story. Margaret Sullivan of the Washington Post had a piece recently, and also Katrina Vandenhuvel, also in the Washington Post, basically saying that, you know, the media, the mainstream press, especially in the United States, needs to put more of a focus on this. This is quite literally the story of our lives, and it basically raises the question of, you know, do we still have, after all these years, reporters and editors who don't grasp the magnitude of the story? And as a result, just sort of, you know, let it blow past. Do they still see it as, to use the infamous Chris Hayes line, a palpable ratings killer? Mm-hmm. And they don't realize that, you know, you know, if you don't cover it, it may well kill all of us.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because I was listening to a podcast called The Weeds on the Vox website. I don't know if either of you guys listen to that. It's got Matt Iglesia and Ezra Klein. And I was quite disappointed with the discussion of the IPCC report, because it just seemed that it was a surface-level discussion by people that usually talk politics. And so they folded the whole thing into kind of this political who's up, who's down, how come the libs aren't winning, you know, back and forth. That was just disappointing because the story is so huge. In fact, the woman on the podcast was saying how it's just depressing that she likes to cover health issues where there's good things and bad things happen, but here, this she just can't get her head around, and she doesn't want to hear about it anymore. She's like, "Great, what a wonderful, what a wonderful presentation in your podcast." But for me, go ahead, Mariah.
No, well, I mean, just along those same lines, I mean, you know, one of the articles I was reading talked about how this report came out and there was, like, you know, the media addressed it briefly, as DR mentioned, but there was kind of a comparison of how much time was spent on the IPCC 6 report versus how much time was spent talking about Kanye West's meeting with President Trump and Omarosa's new book. And it was like an hour on those two things and like 10 minutes, if that, on the climate change, you know. And the Washington Post said that climate change has been described as a catastrophe in slow motion, but the Trump administration could be called a catastrophe at full speed. And so the distractions are relentless.
Yeah.
That's what gets the eyeballs. That's what gets the clicks, is all of this, you know, juicy stuff going on with our current administration.
I guess one of the reactions that I saw to the IPCC report and the call for profound and rapid action, and I think that all of us on this podcast have talked about what we, in quotation marks, must do. And I think there's a couple articles, one from Rebecca Solnit and one from Guinevere Gunther, basically challenging the idea that, you know, who the we is, right? And that we haven't failed. I mean, I think one of the articles is saying that all the people in Bangladesh have not failed, right? There are humans on the planet that want to take action and want to do things, including the people listening to this podcast, but that there is a set of people who don't want to act, and they are the bad actors, right? So this idea that we all need to be more virtuous in our lives, which is good in principle, right? No doubt about it. But somehow that we haven't been virtuous enough is just this myth that gets in the way of recognizing the bad actors, which are these corporations, these people who insist on suppressing climate information. And I think that's a bracing kind of message. I mean, you have this thing come out from the IPCC that says, man, we're all cooked if we don't act within the next few years. And you got to recognize that, you know, you shouldn't feel too guilty, right? That we all need to get together and actually address the societal systemic issues. And I think the report basically refers to sort of, you know, neo-capitalism as the enemy of the planet, right?
Although you know what I'm going to argue, as I've argued before,
but tell me anyway, Dia.
When you talk about the entities that put out all this misinformation, I've said it before and I've said it again. They would not have spent all this money putting out this misinformation unless there were a lot of people, gullible people in the developed world, not the developing world, not people in Bangladesh, you know, but people in the developed world who would be gullible enough to buy it whole and swallow it whole, and people who wanted to be misinformed and to take that misinformation into the voting booth and keep on voting for the people who blocked action. There is a part of the development, there is a we. It may not be as large as it's assumed, but there is a we.
And those,
because when you look at all the that propaganda and all those ExxonMobil ads that said there's no problem and all that stuff, there were a lot of gullible people, and not just in the United States. I mean, there's a prime minister in Australia who said that we need to talk about how fossil fuels are protecting us.
Look at
the denialism in Canada and in the UK. It wasn't just the United States. There were a whole lot of gullible people who wanted to be misinformed and wanted to hear lies.
I think you're saying that the lies. Relevant thing is that it's much easier to believe that there's no problem. Right? So you want to hear that side of the story, and then you're... What's the Simon and Garfunkel song? I mean, all lies in jest until a person hears what they want to hear, right? Yeah. And then you're done, right? It's
What did Annie Lennox say? Some of them want to be used, and some of them want to be abused.
Here we are quoting. Well, anyway, I think that the question of who's responsible, and you know, whether you take the news from the IPCC as a, you don't want to polarize the issue, but on the other hand, it's debilitating to say, oh, you know, we failed, we're not good enough, we you know, need to take more action. It's not clear to me. I mean, what do you think, Maria?
I was listening to Pod Save America, and they had an episode recently about the report, which was great. I was happy to hear that. And one of the things they talked about is to how, if you don't believe that you can solve a problem, you ignore it, right? If you think that there's nothing you can do, you just pretend like it's not there. And so we have to do just as good a job with spin as the deniers did, right? We've got to figure out, you know, we've talked about this before, but we've got to find that song, the right song to play on the radio. And some of the things that they suggested was saying, you know, solving this problem is an adventure, right? Mm-hmm. Here are some of the ways that we can get to zero, and they're really exciting. And look, you know, show people how renewables create jobs and, you know, save you money and are completely don't blow up and, you know, damage homes or, you know, cause destruction, right? So, you know, you show them like, wow, look at this. This is such a great thing, that then people start to demand it more and more often. And of course, a lot of people are working toward that. But, you know, that seems to be something we really have to figure out is,
well, it's funny
it's something they want to tackle.
I remember reading a few weeks ago, maybe late summer, basically, you know Joseph Campbell, right? The guy who wrote about myth making, and what is the hero of a thousand names or something, was his a thousand face, the hero with a thousand faces, about myth making. And of course, it was saying that the Star Wars trilogy is straight out of Joseph Campbell, right? It's got all of the elements of, you know, the guy who goes out and is changed by his adventures and comes back a new person, etc. I mean, that somehow you need to connect the climate story into that, and that there is a hero who has to go face a challenge. And who is that hero? Is it us? Is it mankind? And whatever. But that putting the effort to stop climate change in those kind of mythical settings of the adventure, as you say, Mariah, I mean, that is a sustaining story that allows you to continue making the efforts. And I mean, writing that story, the great climate story, is unclear. I'm not even sure it's a book. I mean, it's basically a view of the problem that is mythic and adventurous in nature. Right.
Wait, I did write my Protecting the Planet is the book I wrote. Does focus on heroes of climate change.
Okay.
when I was writing it, we were trying to figure out how to, sort of celebrate the things that people have done and really talk about how exciting the work is that folks have done. Mm-hmm. But it is a hard drumbeat to sort of make so exciting that people don't want to hear about Kanye West and they'd rather hear about climate change and how to solve it, right? I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to review some of those heroes from your book. We should put up the podcast. We had a podcast of about your book and the people in it, right? A year ago or so. We got to repost that, right? Because you need. I mean, you've touched on something I think that's useful. It's like you need an inspiring story. You need some reason to have hope and to move forward, and that story has to be one of nobility and, transformation. So I'm getting too big for my britches here, but I mean, anyway, we'll see.
Yeah, and I apologize for the shameless plug for my book. I promise I won't do that again. I couldn't resist. Because I think that's right. I do think that there is, we have to make it adventure. We have to make it exciting. We have to sort of talk about how, the future that looks bright.
Right. All right. Yeah. Next podcast, we're going to do that. A bright future. Anyway, in the meantime, we'll put up links to at least some of the stuff. We covered a fair amount of ground tonight, but we'll try to put up some links to give you some guidance to think about the things we talked about. You can find those at the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on Facebook at @massclimateaction. You can find these podcasts on your smartphone using all of those typical distribution apps like Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, etc., etc. You can find us on Apple Podcasts. And so we will close in a way that is very similar to the way we usually close by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions. Secondly, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future. And thirdly, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the crazy policies of the current administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, Mariah, thanks for being here. It's been an adventure.
It's been an adventure.
DR, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks.
We'll talk to you again next week. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.